Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, May 11th. Yesterday, the FDA approved the use of the Pfizer vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds, and the CDC is expected to issue guidelines for its use. It's already available to anyone 16 and over today. The Moderna and J&J vaccines are available to those age 18 and over, and once the CDC acts, minors will need a parent or guardian's permission to get vaccinated. For adults, glass half full. Over half of the currently eligible New Yorkers have received at least one shot. Glass half empty, almost half of eligible New Yorkers have yet to receive their first vaccine dose. All New York City and state-run sites are available for walk-in appointments. Both New York and New Jersey have come up with incentives to get some of the remaining folks vaccinated, from baseball tickets to free beer. So for anyone about to decide for their younger teenagers or for adults who haven't made it to a vaccination site, here's a chance to ask a virologist. Do you have questions about the science behind the three vaccines and how they work? We're joined now by Breanne Barker, an immunologist and virologist who is an associate professor of biology at Drew University in Madison, New Jersey, and co-host of the podcast This Week in Virology. Welcome to WNYC, Professor Barker.
Thanks. It's great to be here. I'm excited to talk with you all about vaccines.
Professor Barker, since it's the Pfizer vaccine that looks like it will be available soon for younger teens, let's start there. Can you give us a little lesson in how it works, and what does it mean that it's an mRNA vaccine?
Sure. With vaccine science, we've done a lot of great work to understand which parts of the virus are key targets for your immune response. And we have learned that a particular piece of the SARS-CoV-2 virus called the spike protein is the main portion that your immune system responds to. So instead of giving you a vaccine that includes all of the parts of the virus, we have made some mRNA that just codes for the spike protein. And we inject that into someone's arm. So a few cells will make the spike protein and allow your immune system to respond just to that one target.
Wow. And when they tested it on people ages 12 through 15, were they using the same dosage as they use for adults?
Yes, they did everything the same as they did in the trial for adults. So it's exactly the same vaccine.
And were the responses the same for some of the younger teens as for adults?
When you look at the efficacy responses, which are calculated based on the number of people who were infected following vaccination, the effect was actually slightly better. They had 100% efficacy in the younger teens, as opposed to the 95% efficacy in adults. The only difference is that they saw slightly more fevers in the younger teens, although that is not terribly surprising.
Were there any other side effects, anything that differed in terms of how these younger folks reacted to the vaccine?
No. Otherwise, the vaccine had really the same safety profile and seemed to have similar efficacy.
As an immunologist, can you explain what's happening with these side effects, what's triggering them, and why the body reacts this way?
Sure. Many of the side effects you feel after getting a vaccine are things like fever or some aches or things like that. And those are all effects that happen because of one part of your immune system's response. So those are all actually things your immune system is sort of doing to you to make some changes in your body to stop viral replication. So that means that you're making an immune response.
I've heard people actually try to say that it's a good thing when you're having side effects because it's your body doing what it's supposed to do. Is that a positive spin to put on potential some of these lesser side effects, perhaps?
Absolutely. I often will tell people that I'm happy to hear their immune systems are working as they should be.
Now, another thing we've sort of seen out there is this question about, can the vaccine change your genetic code? Can you weigh in on that?
Sure. So these vaccines are mRNA-based vaccines. Your genetic code is made of DNA, and that DNA lives in the nucleus of your cells. The mRNA cannot join with the DNA or impact the DNA in any way, and it doesn't go into the nucleus. It actually stays in the cytoplasm of your cells. So that mRNA is going to go into a small number of cells, which are the cells in the area of the arm where you're injected. It's not going to go into all of the cells of your body. And even in that small number of cells, it is going to stay in the cytoplasm and doesn't have the ability to influence your DNA.
Okay. So very clearly, it does not affect your genetic
code
in any
way. No, not at all.
Okay. No. Let's talk to Mike in the Bronx. Mike, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning. As I think about whether to vaccinate my teenager, I worry more about long-term side effects and how we can be reassured that something might not develop 10 or 20 years from now. I mean, I've been vaccinated, but I'm in my 60s. If something happens to me 20 years from now, I'm liable to not be around anyway. But when you have a youngster and you're wondering whether or not, you know, something could happen over the long term, is there any reassurance to give about that, or is it just a fact with all vaccines that we simply cannot know?
So I can give you some evidence based on some other situations that we know about different vaccines. So one thing that we know is that more than 99% of all vaccine side effects at least present to a physician, so show up for the first time within 6 weeks after vaccination. And we've certainly at this point vaccinated many millions of people who are much further than those 6 weeks post-vaccination. And so we have some pretty good idea of the side effects that we potentially will see. There aren't any great examples of side effects that happen in the long term with any different vaccines that we can think of. So it's hard to imagine how that would happen. The mRNA vaccines have been used in human vaccine trials for some other viruses since 2013 and have been used in cancer vaccine trials in people since 2008. And at this point, we have not seen any long-term effects. As I think about the science, mRNA is a molecule that tends to stick around the body only for a very short time. It's not a very stable molecule over the long term. And so I have a hard time imagining ways that it could lead to long-term effects. And when I think about some of the longer-term effects that we are seeing with patients with long COVID, to me, the benefit really seems to outweigh any potential risk, given that I have a hard time imagining much in terms of potential risk.
Mike, thank you so much for your call. I think, again, another important question that I'm sure is on the minds of many of our listeners. Professor Barker, we started the conversation by talking about the Pfizer vaccine, but are Moderna and J&J also testing their vaccines on children?
They are. So I know that the Moderna vaccine is expected to announce results in their tests with the same age group very soon. And Johnson & Johnson is a little bit further behind and will be looking at their data later in the summer.
And when we talk about children, how young are we talking about? I think we heard that in one of our earlier callers. It's still hard for families when not everyone has the same level of protection to make some of these decisions about who to see and where to go. How young could we anticipate seeing people potentially being eligible for vaccines?
So that is a fantastic question. And I know a lot of people who are having that same dilemma. Right now, Pfizer is doing tests in order to test its vaccine on younger children as well. So they are currently testing the 2-year-old to 11-year-old age group. And they have said that they expect to be able to apply for authorization for approval in that age group by September. And there are also trials with Moderna that are covering ages 6 months to 12 years that they expect to be completed within the second half of this year.
I saw that you were also quoted in an article explaining this percentage that, you know, 95% effectiveness of the Pfizer vaccine didn't mean that 5 out of 100 vaccinated people would necessarily come down with COVID-19. So what does it mean?
So when you are calculating vaccine efficacy, you look at the number of people who were in the vaccine group and the number of people who were in the placebo group. And you try to then look at the number who got COVID in both of those groups. And so the way that these trials were set up was actually looking for symptomatic disease. And so in the Pfizer vaccine trial, for example, there were about 21,000 people who got the vaccine, about 21,000 people who got the placebo. And out of the placebo group, there were 172 cases of COVID out of that 21,000. While in the vaccine group, there were 9 cases out of the 21,000.
Wow.
And so you can do some math with the percentages, comparing those two percentages, and that's how you get to that 95% efficacy rate. So that's way less than 5% when you're thinking about 9 out of 21,000.
I'm not going to do the math on air for everyone's sake, but I could appreciate the magnitude of your figures and definitely, I think it should give people some comfort in terms of the efficacy. I think a similar question we have a lot of people trying to figure out as we're moving into this new phase is how much masking is necessary once you're fully vaccinated. Where do you still wear a mask?
I still wear a mask when I am in public places because I want to kind of make sure that everyone around me is feeling comfortable. And I will admit that the mask seems to help my pollen allergies a little bit. So I tend to wear my mask more often, even though I'm fully vaccinated. However, as someone is fully vaccinated, they certainly have that reduced risk of disease and they are less likely to be transmitting. And so I think that just as Dr. Fauci and the CDC have said, we can start to relax some of those mask guidelines if we're not worried about our pollen allergies.
Pollen allergies and colds. I did not miss not having a cold this past year. So
no,
and it do seem to have some benefits in addition to protecting you from COVID-19.
They really do. And if you look at the United States and really the world's data for influenza over the past year, we are at sort of record lows for influenza cases. And so the masks clearly helped with more than just COVID-19.
Let's go to Ula in Mercer County, New Jersey. Ula, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I am a breastfeeding mother, and I really want to get the vaccine, but I'm worried because there hasn't been any, or what I can find, any published research on the effects of a baby who is receiving it through the breast milk. And the other thing is, my whole family recovered from COVID. So I feel like we have a little bit of immunity. And so I just wanted to get your recommendation or how I can get comfortable with the idea of getting it. My husband's already fully vaccinated. I really want to do it. I'm just, worried about what the effects can be on my child.
Sure. Those are both really great questions. So I have not seen any data on transmitting the vaccine through breast milk, and I wouldn't expect that to happen. But there is some data that shows that a vaccinated mom actually can transfer some antibodies via breastfeeding to her infant. And that data came out within the past week or two. And so it looks like, in fact, if you are vaccinated, you could give a little bit of partial protection to your baby. So there doesn't seem to be any risk shown in those studies, but there does seem to be some potential benefit of transferring the immune response, particularly the antibody response, through breastfeeding.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's really fascinating.
Let's go to Eton in West Orange, New Jersey.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. My daughter, she's 14. She actually had coronavirus. Fortunately, it was a mild case in October, and no one else in the family caught it, mysteriously, fortunately. So I was wondering how, if at all, having had coronavirus changes the calculation or the vaccination calculation, if you will.
Thank you for that question. And that question reminded me that, in fact, that was the same second question as the previous caller. So I'm happy to be able to make sure that I address it. There is some data looking at people who have previously been vaccinated or previously been infected, and looking at the vaccine responses. They seem to make a good response to the vaccine after one dose. And so that's very encouraging. There also was some data published that showed that people who were making immune responses after infection with SARS-CoV-2 would make a slightly different immune response in terms of this part of their lymph node called a germinal center. That might make us think that those antibody responses may not last as long or may not be of quite the most ideal quality. And so I would say that it's entirely possible that you will have an immune response after infection, but perhaps it will not last as long as that immune response that you would get from vaccination. And so the general recommendation at this point is that those people who were infected should still go ahead and get vaccinated.
Let's take another caller. Let's go to Anne in Nassau County. Anne, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you. So I have the opposite of a vaccine hesitant person in my house. I've got a 19-year-old who's interested in microbiology and biochemistry, and he got the J&J vaccine very early, you know, as soon as he could. He's now lobbying to get either the Moderna or the Pfizer because he thinks that he will get additional protection from them. And aside from the public health considerations of people, you know, hogging vaccines or vaccinations, I'm wondering about the science. Is it true, because he keeps bugging me about this, I just want to give him an answer. Is it true that he could get additional protection if he got a second round of vaccination?
So the science would indicate that, in fact, he would have an increased response after getting an additional dose of the vaccine. The portion of the spike protein that is included in both the Johnson & Johnson and in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are the same. And so you would get sort of an additional boost to your immune response if you were to get some additional vaccines.
That's interesting.
So if he went from the mRNA, you know, from the J&J to the mRNA, he would get, there would be a different response and presumably additional protection.
It would be an amplification of the first response. So it would be the same type of response, just larger in magnitude.
Professor Barker, has there been any advice or guidance for certain populations to do that? If you had, you know, received a J&J to start, but, you know, it's determined that you have certain health risks that might make you more vulnerable, that you should then go and get a second dose of another vaccine?
So there have not been specific pieces of guidance on that, largely because the clinical trials have not yet been done to indicate what is going on with mixing vaccines. I think that there may be some physicians who have some anecdotal evidence of things working out well, but because the trials have not yet been done, there is no official guidance on that.
Okay. So while you were saying that it might increase someone's immune response, it's not necessarily something that people are recommending that people go out and do at this point.
Because
if you receive a J&J shot, you have been vaccinated.
Exactly. So the Johnson & Johnson shot was designed as a one-shot vaccine. And if you have received your one dose of Johnson & Johnson, you are fully vaccinated. And you should have an immune response that will protect you. Again, their efficacy data was fantastic. And you would be protected in that case.
How concerned should people be if their second dose is delayed? We know that some of the scheduling issues have you know, thrown off when people get that second shot. And we know some people have not gone for that second shot altogether. Are they really protected?
So the way that the trials were done didn't actually look to see what would happen if the second shot was delayed. So we don't have any official data on that. The general idea, thinking about how immune responses work, makes us think that getting your second dose a little late will be perfectly fine. And all the recommendations are that if you are getting your second dose a little bit late, that's okay. Go ahead and get it and make sure that you are getting fully vaccinated. If you look at the data from the trial participants, there is a large increase in the antibody response between the first and the second dose. And so it looks like the second dose really leads to a very high antibody response that is going to allow for much better protection, especially as we think about different versions of the virus. And so while someone with only one shot of Pfizer and Moderna may be somewhat protected against the virus they were vaccinated against, that protection may not last as long, nor is it sort of as robust mm-hmm. as you'd see with two shots.
Professor Barker, you've participated in the virtual town halls given by the American Society for Virology to answer people's vaccine questions. Those are ongoing with virologists from around the country. Are you getting similar questions there as you've heard this morning?
Yes. So I think that the question I have heard most frequently was the question about whether lack of side effects means that your vaccine didn't work. So I'm hearing a lot of very similar questions. There are a few stories out there that people have heard that don't have a lot of evidence behind them about different potential complications. And so we've also talked a little bit about what the data are regarding those complications. But really, there's no data behind them. And so we've had talked about that a little bit. But largely, it's the same questions I'm hearing here.
Well, I can tell we have listeners with many more questions, so hopefully we'll be able to ask them of you again in the future. But for today, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you to everyone who called in with your questions about vaccines and to my guest, Breanne Barker, an immunologist and virologist who's an associate professor of biology at Drew University in Madison, New Jersey, and co-host of the podcast This Week in Virology.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.